On the line, I've got Rachel Goddard. Good morning, Rachel.
Morena.
So, Rachel, you are the Senior Advisor of Climate Action at Waikato District Council, and also from Raglan. Which probably doesn't surprise anyone that they found their climate advisor in Raglan in the district. but tell us, before we get, we're going to talk about the food waste and its contribution to greenhouse gases, but before we do that, just talk about this role, because I think it's new, isn't it? Or newish.
Absolutely, yes, it's a brand new role. I've only been in the job for a few months. I'll just give you a little bit of background on me and how I got to this place.
Yeah.
I'm trained as an environmental scientist for a lot of years at university in Auckland, and landfills was my passion, studying them, you know, drilling down into them, getting the leachate out, assessing the heavy metals and the contents and the leachate. And then that led on to social behaviour in regards to waste and landfills and people's reactions to plastics and recycling. So that's my background. And I've had almost 30 years in the sustainability sector. And prior to moving to WDC, I was heading sustainability at the University of Waikato for over 9 years, and then the role came up. I was very surprised to see the council advertising a climate action role. I was absolutely blown away by that, and I applied and got the job. I've been in the role a few months, and I'm impressed, I have to say. It's not what I expected. Things are moving rapidly. They are genuinely committed to climate change and taking action internally and externally. And we're getting a lot of traction in the space. I'm actually really delighted by that.
Right.
They're committed, and that's great, and that's what we need.
And I think the use of the word action in the job title is that's actually pretty significant for a council to use that word.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know another council that actually has that in their job title. They usually say advisor climate change. So yes, that's quite meaningful, and that was a deliberate inclusion for that title, because they wanted someone to actually drive climate action and make that change, behaviour change, systems change, both internally in the council and in the community as well.
So what sort of things have you been working on since you've got there?
Oh, gosh. A lot of stuff. So when I joined, they already had an existing climate change plan or climate action plan and a policy. I'm revising those documents and making them, and recommending that they be an overarching strategy with targets set and projects aligned to the delivery of those targets. I think it's important that, we are in alignment with the government's targets, which are 50% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. We are in alignment with that, but it's getting our projects and targets to match that and deliver on that that's important. So there's been work going on in that space. A lot of work around comms. We've got a brand new climate action webpage, which is great. There's a lot of resources on there, tips, information, education around people who want to reduce their carbon footprint. There's tips on there for businesses, like there's 12 steps on greening up your business. And these are all PDFs that are free and downloadable, just to help people give, you know, advice, information. As well as staff as well. We've got internal programs. I'm running workshops for staff in-house called Climate Change 101.
Okay.
Basic introduction to climate change, the science, what it means, and then implications for councils, because it's, you know, obviously the policies and plans and frameworks that councils have to adhere to in terms of planning and things. So
do you run workshops for the councillors?
Sorry, this is for staff. I've certainly run workshops for the executive leadership team. I haven't approached the councillors, but I'm sure that they would be open to that.
I know. Like you say, you've just started, so there's only so many things can be done.
Yes, yeah. There's only one of me at this stage. I have to say, things have changed very rapidly. You know, when you've been in the sector for a very long time, you know, I remember years ago when sustainability was sort of considered a hippie, you know, greeny word. It was a bit ephemeral and people didn't really understand it. It took a long time for it to get traction and become used as a norm or in conversation. Whereas climate change has happened way faster. People, you know, talk about it a lot. It's in the media all the time. It seems to have superseded sustainability when essentially they're a similar thing. But, yeah, I mean, everyone seems to be aware. And I think it's probably because we're experiencing it now, you know, the changes with weather, natural disasters and flooding, especially where we live on the coast in Whangaroa. We've seen more flooding. You know, farmers are experiencing more drought. So it's definitely more tangible.
Yeah.
And we know, you know, looking at the science, natural disasters have actually increased by fivefold in the last 50 years. So we know this is happening, and it's faster than we had actually ever anticipated.
Yeah. So I have a question, and it was related to, I mean, we've had discussions here on the morning show about, it was around the district plan, and I know, like, it's certainly easier for council, they can, to make adjustments to their internal activities to take into account climate change and all that sort of thing. But they also have a huge regulatory role. In fact, that is probably their main role. And we had been critical probably a year or two ago about the new district plan coming out, that it talked about climate change mitigation, but wasn't doing anything about prevention, I guess, is the key word. And that's, I mean, that doesn't surprise us. Establishment moves slowly, but are we going to be seeing from council climate change prevention regulations coming into effect at some stage, do you think?
I would say yes. I mean, it's already been talked about. The long-term plan is already starting to go under review again. Climate change is absolutely embedded in all of those documents, long-term plan, district plan, annual plan, blueprint, all in different spaces. And saying, you know, that there is a commitment and that there will be action in the space. We don't tend to use the term prevention. They'll say mitigation and adaptation. Mitigation is preferred because mitigation is always, you know, reducing emissions, whereas adaptation is trying to deal with them afterwards, which is not as good, because of course that's really costly if you're starting to put in infrastructure or, you know, to deal with the effects that have already happened. So mitigation's number one.
Yep.
So
I was using those.
I'm not a planner, but I certainly am providing advice, and we're starting to work through how this would look in terms of a framework. I'm very interested to see us develop a framework for actually measuring and assessing what we're doing in the space, in terms of plans, in terms of achieving outcomes and actions. So I'm looking at building a framework to assess and measure and link, so it's integrated throughout the council. Yeah.
Right. No, I realise now I'm using those terms wrong. I should have been using adaptation and not mitigation when I was trying to explain what I was thinking earlier. So thank you for clarifying that. And I do get, people might be like, oh, this measuring and all this stuff, but I know that within a council, it's a bureaucracy. They're not going to do things without being able to measure it, really, are they?
Well, I think it's the same for everyone. You need to measure, you know. It's like, say, tracking your carbon emissions. You actually need to understand what the activity is and put a number on it, and then benchmark it and try and improve that number. That's essentially what you're trying to do. But I guess this is a little bit broader, because you want to know the impact. It's like an evaluation assessment. You want to know the impact of your intervention or your behavior, to know that it's actually working. So I guess as a scientist, you know, I want to measure stuff and know, you know, that's got a good outcome.
Yeah. Okay, look, let's move on to the food waste collection, which opens for submissions in Raglan until Friday at 5 o'clock, I'm just looking at here. And one thing we haven't – I've talked with Liz from Extreme about a lot of the processes and what's happening from their side of things, but we did want to talk about the specific aspect of the environmental damage of landfills, including leachate, but also the greenhouse gases. And are we able to measure the impact that we'll have if we take food waste out of landfills, take organic material out of landfills?
Yeah, absolutely. So in New Zealand, we've got over 900 landfills. Not many people know that.
Okay. No.
It's a very high amount for such a small country. We're actually the 10th top waste producer in the world. It's a little bit embarrassing, little thing in New Zealand, throwing away all that stuff. But So I guess the thing is with the landfills, so there's, you know, there's 900 that we know of. Those are monitored landfills or legal landfills that we actually know of. There's thousands more that we don't know about that are operating on, you know, maybe farms, or there might be contaminated sites that we just don't know about. That's an estimate. They think there's around 10,000 contaminated sites, which is pretty scary. Mm. So in terms of landfills in New Zealand, the issue with landfills is, you know, you dig a hole, in a very large hole in the ground. I mean, it could be 60 hectares. I think our largest one's around 87 hectares. I think that might be Hampton Downs. It's one of the larger ones. And in the olden days, we never lined them. We didn't put anything in. We just dug a huge big hole and just chucked everything in there. And in the sort of the 40s and 50s and 60s, there was the mentality that you know, you would reclaim land like mangrove swamps or estuaries that were considered, you know, swampy, dirty things. And they would try and build out into them in the landfills. Of course, over time, as everything breaks down, it would leach or leak into the waterways and cause immense amounts of issues from the toxic chemical. That is just a cocktail of everything from, volatile organic acids. I even find actually cyanide in the landfill once, which was actually really quite alarming. Mm. And it leaches into the waterways. It's very easy for it to escape from the site and impacts the shellfish because of the heavy metals that are in the landfills. And the shellfish absorb the heavy metals from the water, and then we come along and eat them. And the leachate can be incredibly acidic, and it can cause lesions on fish. We found this with a landfill in Auckland that I was studying about, nearly 30 years ago. So, and as the landfill breaks down, there are bacteria that live in there. They're called aerobic bacteria, meaning they work with oxygen, and they will break down all the food waste first. So all the organic material, paper, food waste, anything organic that was once living, the bacteria will consume that first. And as a byproduct of their respiration, they produce methane and carbon dioxide, which are both greenhouse gases.
Yeah.
So the gas escapes from the landfill. It's usually vented because methane actually explodes by itself. It's a really freaky gas. It's like 5%. You just need 5% in the atmosphere and it can go boom by itself. No match or flame. It just explodes, which we have seen lots of landfill fires. It's quite alarming to see these blue flames shooting out the ground. And so the methane and the CO2 that goes up into the atmosphere, and actually it traps the sun's rays, so it sort of locks it into the planet, into the atmosphere, and it reflects that heat back down. So with food waste, it's roughly 50% methane and 50% CO2 when it's breaking down. And the methane has a much, much stronger warming potential. So if you think about it in the atmosphere for 20 years, it's about 80 times stronger than CO2. Sorry, I've got a call coming through.
All right, we'll
move that.
Stop that. Did you just say, you said the methane is 80 times more effective at containing the heat than the carbon dioxide?
Yes, so 80 times stronger over 20 years. If you draw it out over 100 years, it's about 25 times. So methane is a much, much more effective gas at trapping the heat. It's much stronger than CO2. So it's really the methane that we have an issue with in New Zealand. So you think about agriculture. You know, backbone of our economy, and especially in the Waikato region. You know, look at the agricultural sector here. Just in the Waikato, the emissions from agriculture are 30% higher in this region than any other area in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And it's a really difficult one. So you've got that sort of tension between the economy versus the environment. But I won't talk about that. So going back to the gases, so nitrous oxide is actually the worst one of all, but we don't have a lot of that. So that's a very small percentage. It's the methane that we really focus on with food waste. And, you know, you think of all the things breaking down in the landfill. There's rubber and metal and nappies and computers and food. And there's dead animals. It's pretty gross. I've photographed and studied a lot of landfills. And so that's the main issue with organic matter going to landfill. We really don't want it in there. It causes massive problems, like I've talked about, water quality problems, and the greenhouse gas impact as well. Even modern landfills, so modern landfills are lined with plastic, high-density polyethylene. They'll have a clay layer, and they'll have geotech layers in, as well. But they don't last forever.
Yeah.
So no landfill liner will last forever. They will eventually erode. And depending how hot the landfill is, they break down faster if the landfill is hot. And landfills can operate at, God, anywhere, you know, between 40, 50, 60 degrees Celsius, because you don't know what's in there. Every landfill is different. Nobody looks at what's going in there. It just gets dumped.
And so this is the compost effect. Yeah. Like we have the hot compost unit at Extreme, where they're deliberately making compost and using heat. So we know that it works that way. But this is also happening in the landfills, depending what's in there. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, which is what we don't want, because we can't control the effects of it. So it's absolutely essential that we get that food waste out of the rubbish bags. And we know in Raglan, waste audits have been conducted. We know in Raglan over 35% of those rubbish bags is actually food waste. You know, so people are paying. Not only are they paying to throw that rubbish away into the landfill, but it's all the associated environmental impacts of that. So, yeah, so Liz said, I think 614 tonnes of food waste has been diverted in 4 years from Whangaroa.
Yeah.
And that would work out to 153 tonnes a year. And there's various calculations for working out how much CO2 that would reduce. And they call it CO2E, so it means carbon dioxide equivalent. So it means the collection of greenhouse gases like methane, etc. So it's like a measurement or a formula that they use to capture all of the gases in one measurement.
Yeah.
They think it's about 50%. So that would mean that if we had 153 tons a year, about half of that, which would be what, 76.5 tons.
Yep.
50%. So composting versus landfill can reduce CO2e by 50%. So in terms, because people go, well, what the hell does that mean? So in terms of visual here, and this is just an approximate, that would be roughly around 38 cars worth of CO2 in a year. So you could say it's roughly the same as taking about 38 cars off the road, if you get what I mean.
Right, and that's what we've been doing.
Yeah, so that's what Extreme does now. It collects the food waste from the little green food caddies in Raglan, and in 1 year is roughly equivalent to around 38 cars off the road. If a car, an average car in New Zealand, uses or gives out about 2 tons of CO2e in a year. So that's just a really rough approximation, because there's so many different factors to take into consideration.
Can I ask the question around another way? Do we know what percentage of greenhouse gases that we don't want going up? Do we know what percentage is coming from putting organic material into landfills?
Do we know? You mean in terms of New Zealand, how much food waste is causing greenhouse gas in landfills? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, so we got like cars do this percentage of it, and industry does this percentage.
Oh, I see. Well, it differs across New Zealand. So, I mean, some areas are putting up to 50% of food waste in rubbish bags. So you could say half of the greenhouse gases in landfill are from organic matter easily, because, I mean, I suppose you could include wood in that as well, sawdust, green waste. I can't give you an answer. It'd be easy to find out, though.
It's interesting talking to someone who's a scientist, because you're like, I hear you mentally calculating, trying to mentally calculate it down to the, you know, get the answer exactly right. And that's fair enough. I guess I'm looking for, is just the all the organic material in landfills, is that a significant contributor to green waste and, oh, not to green waste, to climate change?
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. It definitely is. So the organic matter in all of the landfills in New Zealand is the main contributor to methane and carbon dioxide. So landfill gases are usually roughly half and half CO2 and CH4, which is methane. But there's a whole raft of other very, very toxic gases in there as well. Some of them are carcinogenic. They cause cancer. Some landfills capture those gases and they clean them, they scrub them, they grab the methane and they generate electricity. But out of those roughly 900 landfills, I think there's only maybe 12 or 13 that do that. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
It's very cool if they do that because they're getting a free energy, or almost free energy source to power electricity in other houses. But yes, food waste and green waste is the main producer of methane and CO2 because of those aerobic bacteria that are in the landfill breaking it down.
Right.
And they're causing that as a byproduct of their respiration.
So yeah. This is basically removing organics from landfill. This is a huge opportunity to make, you know, significant strides for that and the issue of leachate, which I don't want to get into right now, but that's obviously long-term a massive issue as well.
Absolutely. And if you think about it, it bioaccumulates or biomagnifies as it goes up the food chain. So like I said before, you know, leachate escaping from old landfills into estuaries, you know, being absorbed by the shellfish and then, you know, us coming along and eating them or eating the fish. And, you know, you've heard of mercury poisoning in people, you know, and as we're at the top of the food chain, you know, those heavy metals bioaccumulate as they go up and they can be stored in your tissues and your fatty cells, you know, all sorts of things. So,
yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's quite fascinating.
Well, Rachel, it's been really interesting to talk to you this morning, and I'm out of time now. It's time to end the show, but I would love to talk to you again about what you're doing at council, what council is doing, and get into a bit more of the detail if we have a bit more time. So maybe sometime in the future we might do that.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that, absolutely. And I would encourage people to please submit to the food waste a consultation that's out right now. Even if you don't use the service, it's a very valuable service in the extreme. We really need to keep that running. It's a very important service that we have in this community. We're very lucky to have that.
Yeah. All right, Rachel, thank you for your time this morning.